You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Hey guys, it's Erin and welcome back to the 50 State Cold Case Spotlight. Last week was our first week and we started off in Maryland. We are not going alphabetical. I am picking states at random. And today we are going into the first day of our new state, Rhode Island. Today we're going to highlight the case of Janine Callahan, who is listed in the Rhode Island Cold Case Database and is featured on the deck of playing cards. However, she is not from Rhode Island and her date of disappearance is incorrect on her card. We are going to address both of those things today. According to Burrillville Police Department Lieutenant Riendu, who did a news report in 2019 with WPRI News 12, these are the correct details of Janine Callahan's case. November 9th, 1985, Janine Callahan, 24, of Natick, Massachusetts, was doing her typical routine that morning, walking to her work at the now-closed Zyra store. Unfortunately, that day, Janine never made it to work. She would be reported missing, and a month later, in December, her remains would be discovered by a hunter in Burrillville, Rhode Island, at the end of a dirt road known as Cherry Farm. She was found naked with only her socks on and was covered with a discarded Christmas tree. Due to the amount of trauma to her body, medical examiners were unable to determine her cause of death. Investigators have speculated that whoever murdered Janine was probably from the Burrillville area and lived near Cherry Farm Road. There is very little details available in her case online. Investigators are asking anyone that can help solve Janine's case to please reach out to Rhode Island investigators at 1-877-RI-SOLVE. And we are on day number two, and today I will be highlighting the case of John Leatherwood. One of the most unfortunate things about John Leatherwood's case, like many unsolved cases, is there isn't much information leading up to his death, and there's not many photos publicly available. But what we do know about John was nobody had anything negative to say about him and that he was very well liked within his community. Pawtucket Detective Cromier said that John was very polite and most people said that he was a sharp dresser. John, 32, lived in the city of Providence, Rhode Island, and was one of the aides to Buddy Cinciani, the mayor of Providence, who was running for his second term. On June 11th, 1978, a police officer who was patrolling Veterans Park would come across John's white Mustang around 5 a.m. in the morning. He noticed that there was no driver. There was a pack of cigarettes and a prescription set of sunglasses sitting on the roof of the car, but no one to be found. The officer decided that he would search the park, and that's when he would find, next to one of the stone fireplaces, John's body, who had been stabbed repeatedly. The officer said it was a gruesome scene. Around 3 a.m., just 2 hours before, an officer had seen teens playing Frisbee and told them to go home. They did track those teens down and asked them if they noticed anything or knew anything about John's case, and they didn't notice anything that night. Investigators really don't know what the motive was in John's death since he was so well-liked, and they don't believe it was robbery as John's glasses, wallet, key, and jewelry was still with him. Investigators believe this was something personal. According to the Rhode Island Historical Society, detectives did have a suspect in the beginning, but they never pressed any charges in John's case. John's case was recently reopened in 2019, and investigators are trying to piece together John's life before that morning. They did collect a lot of evidence, and they are hoping that some of it contains the killer's DNA. They do have plans as technology advances to begin testing more of those items. What they need is someone who knew John in his personal life to help them really put the pieces together to figure out why he was at that park in the morning in the first place. How we can help investigators is by sharing his name and his face in hopes that someone who knew John will come forward and give investigators the pieces that they need to move forward with his case. Anyone with information in John Leatherwood's case is asked to call 1-877-RI-SOLVE. will be highlighting Michelle Norris's case. Michelle Norris, 7, was said to be shy, smart, and an absolute mama's girl. On May 26, 1988, Michelle and her brothers and a few cousins decided to go to the park behind the Captain G. Harold Hunt Elementary School, where Michelle was a first grader. Michelle's mother, Julie, was at home suffering from a kidney infection at the time, and she thinks about the last time she saw her daughter, Michelle, very often. She said that Michelle had come into her room and asked her if she wanted any Tylenol. She told her no thank you, and on her way out the door, she told her mother that she loved her. Michelle, who had just recently turned 7, was playing at the park with her brothers and her cousins when suddenly she was just gone. None of the other children heard her shout, scream, or saw anything suspicious. Julia said that there was no way that Michelle would have left willingly with somebody, as she never went near strangers. She believes it had to be someone that Michelle knew. Michelle was reported missing right away that day, and several searches brought in very few leads. 4 days after Michelle disappeared, investigators would discover her remains on a debris-covered hill in a desolate wood area less than half a mile from the school. Her clothes were lying next to her. She had been SA'd, beaten, and strangled. The Central Falls Police Department would question several people, but they've kept information regarding Michelle's case very quiet. Police Chief Robert Cochette told reporters a few days after finding Michelle's remains, quote, "In order not to hamper the investigation or any subsequent legal proceedings, no details will be released," unquote. Michelle's mother, Julia, said in the first year she believes that investigators were very active with Michelle's case, pursuing every lead. But since then, she feels like Michelle isn't a priority. Weeks and years turned into decades, and now it's been 37 years, and Michelle's case still remains unsolved. Julia has since moved away from Rhode Island and now lives in Massachusetts, where she is a grandmother to 7. Losing her daughter the way that she has, and it still being unsolved, haunts her, and the trauma has bled through to her grandchildren, who she says she fears when they go outside because she knows how scary the world really is. One of the best ways that we can honor Michelle in her family is by sharing her face and her story again and again. Today, I will be spotlighting the case of Brian Nissenfeld. In the fall of 1997, Brian, 18, had been a student at the Roger Williams University in Bristol since the September semester. This was Brian's first semester at college, and he was feeling homesick. He had a single-room dorm, and he didn't have the typical experience where you have a roommate. He had not formed any close friendships on campus yet and had been known to be a homebody. Brian's mother said she wouldn't call him a loner, but that Brian had and kept a small circle of friends and acquaintances. A week before he vanishes, Brian does send a letter to his mother saying that while he wanted to move far away for college, he also wanted to stay close to his family, which included his brother and half-sister. Brian's parents said his first semester was causing him some stress, and he had recently switched majors from architecture to English. Brian was an honored student in high school, but his parents didn't think he realized how hard it would be to be able to keep up in college. Plus, he was on a scholarship, so he had that pressure as well. Brian also told his parents that he had been in an argument with another student on campus who had dropped out earlier in the semester, but he didn't tell his parents what the argument was about. On February 6th of 1997, Brian would last be seen leaving one of his classes, and then it was like he vanished. It would take the university 6 days to notify his parents that he was missing. Once Brian's family was notified that he was missing, it didn't take them long to pile into their car and drive from Philadelphia to Rhode Island to assist in law enforcement in his search. Brian's father, family, and friends visited a homeless kitchen and even suspected drug homes in Providence searching for Brian. The following weekend, his 15-year-old brother, plus his grandfather and several friends returned the next week. They rented a van and they searched the wooded areas mentioned by a psychic. His family and friends would spend hours standing on Route 114 South holding a large poster containing Brian's picture and his description. As the weeks turned into months, Brian's family would take dozens of trips to Rhode Island to hand out flyers, talk to students, and continue the search for Brian. In those first few months, there were so many tips of sightings for Brian that gave the family hope that he was still out there. About 7 months after Brian's disappearance in September, a local family in Rhode Island that was hiking came across bones and a boot on Hog Island across from Narragansett Bay in Bristol. Investigators were able to determine that those bones did belong to Brian through DNA. Investigators did search Hog Island, checking the area and the shoreline to see if there were any additional bones. Unfortunately, they were not able to locate any more remains, which made the cause of death impossible to name. This also left so many questions for investigators and Brian's family that they are struggling to answer. Brian's mother truly believes that her son was murdered, saying that Brian was getting threatening calls up to the week before he went missing. But investigators and the college say that there is no proof of foul play. The university has remained cooperative throughout the investigation and state they will continue as investigators search for answers. Please continue to share Brian's story. Anyone with information in Brian's case, no matter how small you think it is urged to call the Bristol Police Department at 401-253-6900. Today, I will be highlighting the case of Rita Bouchard, whose violent case still remains unsolved 78 years later. Rita, at 17, had already lived a turbulent childhood before her violent death. Her parents would die of tuberculosis, and her siblings would become wards of the state. Rita and her sister Mildred were best friends, and they were actually placed together. They were so close that Mildred would later go on to have a daughter and name her Rita. Rita's family say that she was a very hard worker and a sweet girl. Both Rita and Mildred were working at the Rhode Island Fabrics in 1947. On February 1st, 1947, Rita had been at work and she said that she was feeling sick. Mildred said the night before that Rita had told her that she was very worried about something but didn't elaborate more. Witnesses last saw Rita getting into a car near Collier Park on Main Street in Pawtucket with a man who called her by her name. Rita never returned home that night, and the next morning a hiker would find Rita's remains in an area called Lover's Lane behind Slater Park. Rita's throat had been slashed and she'd been stabbed multiple times with what they believe was an axe. Rita had a horrific and brutal murder. There's a tree in the state park that still bears the scars of her murder, the tree that she was discovered in front of. Investigators were able to use Rita's little black book of names and addresses, and that brought them down to two suspects. One was a married man with a criminal record that they knew that Rita was secretly dating against her guardian's wishes. This suspect was said to have been a handsome photographer who went by the name Al. Investigators say that it appeared he had money, good clothes, and an expensive automobile. Rita's friends would tell investigators that Rita was infatuated with him. Mary Lewis's Rita's guardian said that she knew that Rita was going to leave work early for a doctor's appointment, but there was never a doctor's appointment made with her doctor. Mary Lewis also told investigators that she did know about this mysterious older gentleman, Al, that he was good-looking and well-spoken, but she didn't know his full name, and she didn't think Rita did either. Mary said when she first found out about this relationship, she was shocked that Rita was consistently dating this man, and she forbid Rita from seeing him. Especially when she found out this gentleman was exceptionally older than Rita. Despite not having a doctor's appointment, investigators do believe that Rita was actually headed to her doctor's office. Investigators say that when she got off early, she did go to catch a bus and requested a transfer to Wadsworth, where her doctor's office would be. She made that transfer, and that is where they believe that a man in the car approached her. They were eventually able to locate this suspect, and investigators confirmed that he was away from home for 24 hours that Friday evening. Rita got off of work early and went missing. The suspect was never named or charged. The other suspect was a man who has never been named or charged by police. It says that he was with Rita that Friday night and he blacked out, and when he woke up, he was next to her body. Investigators interviewed him for 72 hours straight. His story continuously changed, but eventually, investigators had to let him go, and he was never charged. Pawtucket Detective Cormier reopened this case in 2019, saying, quote, "She was 17 years old. She had her entire life in front of her. This is kind of a scary place for her life to end. Seeing the axe marks and the tree tells the story of what happened here," unquote. Sue, Anthony, and Rick Bouchard never had the chance to meet their Aunt Rita, as they were born several years after her murder, but the stories that they heard from their parents about Rita's murder still haunt them. Rick says he just wants closure and wants Rita to be able to rest in peace. He said that Rita's murder was all that his father ever talked about, and it bothered him so much, and they're just hoping to finally put it to rest. Sue said that her mother couldn't even go to her sister's grave. It was just too painful. She said that Rita will never be forgotten, has never been forgotten, and this will be an open wound in their family until it is solved. Investigators in Rita's family know the odds of solving this murder 78 years later will lead to a killer that is most likely already dead, but they still remain committed to solving her murder. Please keep sharing her story, and if you have information in Rita's case, you are asked to call 1-877-RI-SOLVE. Thank you for taking the time to get to know Rita today, and don't forget, every time we see those missing and murdered posts on social media, hit like and share, because every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Don't forget, we will be here next week, and we will be heading to North Dakota. Thank you for watching another 50 State Cold Case Spotlight.